And from the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. The National Climate Assessment is a chance for researchers across the U.S. to share local impacts of global climate change with Congress and with the rest of the nation. The fifth edition of the assessment is set to come out in late 2023. Authors of the Alaska chapter are now asking citizens to share what climate change means to them during the assessment's public comment period. KTOO's Anna Canny has more.
Just over a year ago, a series of snow and rainstorms in Fairbanks caused power outages, damaged homes, and disrupted emergency services. Alyssa Quintine remembers it as Snowmageddon.
I was taking pictures of my house because I had like 6 feet of ice that had, you know, stocked up, and I had a tree that had fallen and frozen on my roof.
Quintine is a community organizer for the Alaska Center and a co-author on the upcoming National Climate Assessment. She says that extreme weather in Fairbanks is just one of the climate impacts featured in the assessment's Alaska chapter.
So it's like we are trying to represent like the impacts that are happening to residents in real time.
Across the state, heavier rains, changing snowfall, warming waters, and ocean acidification are causing profound changes to the environment. Now Alaskans can tell the nation what those changes mean for them. Until January 27th, Quintine and other authors are asking the public to review their draft of the new National Climate Assessment. The climate assessment is mandated by Congress. It pulls together diverse experts to give an update on climate change impacts across different regions of the U.S.
It's an opportunity for us regular people to essentially tell the story of what is happening in our own state to other states and to Congress. So it's a pretty big deal.
The assessment doesn't mandate any specific action, but Quintine says it will provide direction for lawmakers, researchers, and local organizers as the climate continues to change. The Alaska chapter's lead author, Henry Huntington, with the Ocean Conservancy, says this edition of the report focuses more on humans than ever before.
Our charge, our assignment has been altered a bit, which is to focus more on the society side. So what does this mean for people? What does this mean for people around Alaska, rather than, you know, getting into the details of the biophysical system and so on?
In Southeast Alaska, the changing climate has impacted subsistence farming, fisheries, snow and rainfall, and invasive species. But this assessment goes beyond the natural environment to discuss COVID-19, housing discrimination, healthcare, crisis response, and even internet access. Huntington hopes that the assessment will show how the changing environment could make existing social vulnerability and inequity worse.
So it's that idea that climate change is happening within the broader social context that's already there and is going to add more stresses to what we're already experiencing.
Quintine hopes that the comments submitted this month will help the climate assessment to be the most useful resource it can be for all who read it.
We're doing it for education, we're doing it for awareness, but we're also doing it for empowerment so people can make the best informed decisions moving forward, whether they be someone like me.
And that was KTOO's Anna Canny. The commercial fishing industry in the Bering Sea is weathering some devastating storms with the recent snow and king crab closures. Increased costs for fuel, parts, and labor are also forcing some fishermen to tighten their belts and even consider other career paths. So when a group of Bering Sea fishermen recently heard they'd be getting paid less than they hoped for this cod season, they decided to do something about it. KUCB's Maggie Nelson has more from Unalaska.
The heyday of Alaska's crab fisheries is a long cry away. After 2 years of king crab closures, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game also announced it would be closing Bering Sea snow crab for the 2022 season as well. The estimated economic loss to the fleet for both closures is nearly $290 million. It's the bread and butter for most of the fleet. They fish for other species when they're not crabbing, like cod, as a sort of bonus. But this year, things are different. Without king or snow crab, a lot of boats are relying on other work, like fishing for cod, small amounts of tanner crab, and summer tendering gigs just to get by. Chris Studeman is the captain and co-owner of the 104-foot fishing boat Kevlin K. When he caught wind that Trident had posted a devastatingly low price for cod, he started to worry.
The season, with the price that they came out with, it wasn't even affordable for us to operate.
Studeman hopped on social media and struck up a conversation with some other cod fishermen. He says he didn't go in planning anything specific. He just wanted to gather some fishermen and talk. But soon they organized. They decided they wanted a better idea of what most of the canneries would offer them for their catch before they started dropping any gear.
We never really put a name or a label on it. We were just trying to make sure we got a price to come out before we all went fishing, you know, and 40 cents wasn't going to work.
40 cents was what they heard Trident would pay for cod. By the start of the season on January 1st, they hadn't received word from other processors on prices. That's not unusual. Fishermen often head out to catch cod before they know for sure how much they'll be making per pound. Studeman, who's been fishing in the Aleutians for about 2 decades, says that's just kind of how it goes.
I mean, the cannery kind of has always held all the power because they put out a price and everybody goes fishing. And you know, the only way we can stop that is to get together as a group, as a whole.
This new year, they gave that a try. Studeman and about 25 other boats decided to hold out and not fish.
Because we're able to get the small boats and the big boats both to, you know, be on the same page. I hope in the future that, you know, we can get organized the first week of December and then be talking with the processors before we even attempt to come up. And hopefully we can have a price that everybody can agree on before we even leave our homes.
The boats stood down for just about 3 days. By January 4th, they'd gotten word from most processors on prices. Ultimately, Studeman says they posted a price of about 45 cents per pound across the board. That's less than last year, but in the current climate, the 5 cent jump makes a difference.
Pretty much all the crab fisheries that we've been fishing for with this boat are gone. We don't have a lot left on the table. We got codfish and some barredeye to go catch this year, and then salmon tendering. So everything's pretty tight for all of us.
A lot affects the price for cod. Tom Enlow is the president and CEO of Unisea, a fish and crab processing plant in Unalaska. He says the price of labor for an entry-level processor has gone up 14% since last year.
The market's not the same as it was a year ago. And so if we paid the fisherman the price we paid a year ago, we were going to lose money. And then, you know, that's not why we're in business.
Enlow says he gets it, though. He'd probably do the same if he were in the harvester's shoes. And he says he's happy the company could come to an agreement with the fishermen.
It's just a little bit of us revisiting our calculations and making sure that we can pay the harvesters what they would like to get paid and still make money.
Unisea is offering 46 cents per pound. And like most other processors, they offer volume incentives to their harvesters. So as the fishermen deliver more product, the price they get for that fish goes up. As for the harvest amounts, boats larger than 60 feet have about 5,000 metric tons of cod to catch this season, and smaller boats have about half that. Those numbers have been on a downward trend for the past several years. Reporting for KUCB, I'm Maggie Nelson.
And two house fires at Anchorage over the New Year's weekend left one person dead and another badly hurt. Anchorage Fire Department Assistant Chief Alex Boyd says smoke alarms made a key difference in the outcomes of the blazes.
Smoke alarms lead to that early notification, early escape, and the ability to get out of the home are very important things that were not present in the fatality fire.
The fatal fire was reported just before 11 p.m. Saturday, New Year's Eve, in South Anchorage. Flames had engulfed half of the home by the time firefighters arrived. After extinguishing the flames, they found the sole resident dead in the burned part of the home. The victim's name hasn't been released as family are notified. Investigators believe improperly handled or disposed of smoking material caused the fire. Boyd says firefighters did not hear a smoke alarm.
None of our crews heard or saw that, and none of the bystanders heard or saw anything that indicated it was there, and we're not finding evidence of non-working ones. So based on everything we're seeing, we think there were no smoke alarms in the home.
About 24 hours later, firefighters responded to a second fire, this one in northeast Anchorage. One of several occupants who got out of the home reported smoke, and firefighters found an injured resident who was taken to a hospital in critical condition. Boyd says investigators believe the injured resident started the fire. He declined to specify how, pending further investigation. Boyd says that home had a working smoking alarm. He urged residents to ensure smoke alarms are in working order with fresh batteries and to have escape plans for how to leave their home in the event of a fire. And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's 33 degrees. The low tonight is 32. Right now it's cloudy, but there's a chance of snow later tonight. And Friday, the chance goes up. Friday night, it's expected to rain, and that's supposed to last until maybe Sunday when we might get some sun. The highs look to be around 40 this weekend with the lows in the mid-30s. You're listening to KTOO.